Okay. Erev Tov. Okay, I would like to speak a little bit about some of the local food establishments, and once and we'll set up some musician whenever we'll speak to some others. But from what I was able to fill in, I'd like to share with you what's going on. Right. Basically, as far as the Yad Binyamin itself, okay, the situation, thank God, is pretty good. Okay, and pretty much we don't have a lot of food establishments here, but whatever you have here, pretty much is okay. And we have the pizza store, which is officially under the hashgacha of the Rav Bnei Re'im, but the mashgiach is someone from Taras Hachaim and the Bnei from Taras Hachaim. I spoke with him, and pretty much everything here is okay. And he also stressed, which is important, especially in sort of from that we saw with the Chiyosphere, that he says that Tony considers a very, very reliable person, someone who's very trustworthy and very cooperative with him, and therefore, you know, the concerns of, you know, switching, and he feels is really in another situation, is not a problem at all, and therefore that's pretty much acceptable. The fruits and vegetables, Amnon gets some of it from Efrati, the most of the dry stuff. The regular fruits and vegetables gets from Ashkelon, has a Mahajan Hashkacha by, they have the Rabbanut, obviously, and they have the Mahajan Hashkacha by Bidat Hadara Kashut of Yitzchak Farda. I don't know much about him, I did speak with Rav Hadai about him, and he says he's a reliable person. I want to try to find a little bit more as far as, you know, he's supposed to be a Talmud Chacham, but doesn't give his name easily. Apparently it's more like a local, it's a kind of, I asked like, how come I never heard of it? And it seems like he's mostly an Ashkelon person. So that's why it's not, beyond Ashkelon, you don't hear much about him. But, so I'm trying to find a little bit more about him, but about the Kash, yeah. The food store gets from, basically from, the local, you know, the wheat, the daily fruit delivery, the fruit and vegetable delivery comes from, basically from Ashkelon, and it's under that. The Makolet, gets supplies from the Rabbanut, but he is Marfis Shumas Hamaisis over again in the store, and therefore, you know, he's taking care of the Shumas Hamaisis as far as that as well. But exceptions of there were certain things. At one point, put up a sign that stuff like one big stuff is very hard to. You only have a few units. When you had the watermelon and you had the big pumpkins and stuff and the pineapples, you didn't want to start cutting them open. So that he wasn't mafish in the store, and therefore if one wants to be careful, when you finally end up cutting it up, you want to be mafish again l'chumra, you can be mafish again l'chumra. We have the Beit HaRacha over here, the Beit HaRacha here in Yad Binyamin, yes, Orla. Okay, so Orla is, I have to find out a little bit more about the Orla. In the Rabbanut, in principle, when they give it to us, it's free of Orla, is supposed to be checking that it's in fact free of Orla. It may depend, I have to check further into this. Some mentioned that some Rabbanut may rely on the Rov. I did speak with the one from the Rabbanut, Tereshit Yerushalayim, who was sort of overseeing, says they are supposed to be checking. I'm assuming that the issues of Orla are less problematic than Shumas HaMaisos in terms of getting mixed up. Meaning that let's say you have a farmer who comes and he brings every day a supply of vegetables. He could be bringing a supply of vegetables possibly even more than once a day. So you can imagine that in the packing house you're going to be having a constant supply of vegetables coming in throughout the course of the day. And that's one of the major reasons that people are concerned as far as Shumas HaMaisos, that unless the Mashgiach is constantly on top of it, many are machfish over again the chumrah, because there's a possibility that this particular carton of cucumbers or this particular carton of apples or this particular carton of potatoes, whatever it is, managed to get in there and they weren't machfish in this particular carton. On the other hand, I'm assuming that as far as Orla, it's a little bit less, and because you're dealing there basically with an orchard with a certain supplier, and either the supplier has been checked or the supplier has not checked. It's not like this batch of apples is going to be Orla, this batch of apples is not going to be Orla. Basically, if this plantation, if this apple orchard is under Orla supervision, it's going to be under Orla supervision. If it's not under Orla supervision, it's not going to be under Orla supervision. As far as Shumas HaMaisos, you could have a possibility that today's apples, they came in at 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, more there was someone with mafish from, and the apples that happened to come in at 2 in the afternoon somehow maybe slipped its way through whatever, someone was there, someone was here, got So that's one. But as far as Orla, I suppose if they check the orchards from which they're coming, the likelihood they're coming from a different orchard that wasn't on the list, Bechlal, is somewhat less. So therefore, I assume that. Again, I spoke with him from Abbas Harshit, and he said it could be relied upon. I'll try to check a little bit more. That's the specifics in terms of where it's coming, the specific reference from which it's coming. But, yeah.
I thought I heard once that there's actually a list of fruits that you, I guess, never are called oral with because they don't have fruit.
Okay.
And that doesn't exist. Is it possible for you to actually...
There is, yes. There is, but they have... Someone has been putting out for the last number of years, he puts out a chart of the percentages of orla available in the shuk.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Meaning that if you just go to whatever shuk, whatever, or you're in a place where you're not able to get or for whatever reason you want to buy in a shuk, and there's no particular hashgacha for the orla, to know what the percentage is of orla. What's the issue? Because there are those who say, and the Sfardim are a little bit more makel on this issue, that we have a rule called the parish, meruba parish. Whenever something comes from, you have a large group, and something is taken out from the group, right, what you have in front of you, you assume came from the majority. And since in almost all fruits and vegetables, orla is almost always a minority, you can assume that if I have, let's say I have apples, and there are tons and tons and tons of apples in the country, and right now I have in front of me, I took a bag of apples, okay, and I'm buying a bag of apples, I can assume that bag of apples is from the majority, and therefore this bag of apples is not orla. However, we have a concept which we'll speak about, I guess when we get more into detail in terms of orla, we'll go into all these things when we'll be beginning today, Mitzvah Hashem, a series on Mitzvah Tzuyas Baretz. There is a concept of kavua, when certain things are established in a certain place. And if you have an orchard which exists here and stays here, and it's at its place, and there we have a rule called kavua, anything which is established, kemechsal mechsadami. We don't always apply the rules of rov when you have something called kavua, when something is established in a certain place. And therefore, there are those who say that if you have a significant number of orla trees, established throughout every area in the country, then you can't apply the rov anymore unless you have a much, much lower percentage. Some say 5%, some say 0.5%, right, in which case it becomes a very, very low probability. And therefore, you can't even say it's established throughout the country. Okay, so that's why there is a table they have, and I can try to get access to it. There is a table of percentages of orla available on the market. Most fruits, especially the winter fruits, is quite low, and therefore orla is usually pretty much not so much a problem. Therefore, let's say for example, if something comes up in terms of if someone brings you an orange or brings you a grape or something like that, someone who you don't know, you can't trust on his Trumas and Maisas. Someone comes and gives you an apple and orange, right? You have a visitor or someone. Okay, so as far as Trumas and Maisas, it's not a problem. So you go ahead and you mask this Trumas and Maisas by yourself. But what about the Orla issue? I can't undo Orla. So there you can rely that fruits and that, especially winter fruit, the incidence of Orla is very, very low. And therefore, you would be able in many situations to eat it. And the same thing in apples also, I guess, so there are certain fruits. The summer fruits can get a little bit higher, especially grapes. And so they can get a little bit higher, but most, especially in the winter. So I'll try to bring, when we get to this issue of orla, okay, Mitzvah Hashem, another couple of weeks, I'll bring in the chart and we'll be able to see the percentages of the various fruits. Okay? So, that's that. And finally, we said that the Beit HaRacha here is under Rav Efrati, Hashgacha Rav Efrati, and Mr. Mashkiach is Rav Schultz from the Vatikim. And, right? Okay, now you know. Okay, if you have any questions about it, you can just speak with Mr. Schultz. And in Chafetz Chaim, the catering there is under Rav Rubin. And therefore, pretty much over here, you're in pretty good hands, B'sach HaKol. Right. If you go a little bit further beyond Yad Binyamin and Chafetz Chaim, okay, I tried to get a list from Gedera. I spoke with the one who was in charge. He wasn't able to get this week. Hopefully, I'll get it next week. The Mifkash Shesh, I don't know about. I didn't have a chance. I didn't check it. I don't know what the. I just see it says a sign, but I don't know what any who what where. I just didn't. I never looked into it. Okay, so there I'm going to leave for the meanwhile. Okay, hopefully next week I'll hope to have a better list of Gedera. We have in Bilu Center, okay, there is, if I was looking for a Mahaj restaurant, is the Badat Space Yosef glass grill in Bilu Center. It was an interesting situation. This goes as far as the email, probably saw there was in the last Rabbanut, Itkun Kashut Rabbanut, it said that the Kashut was removed from this establishment, from this glass grill. And wanted to know if I was trying to figure out what was going on. So I contacted, just through the website, just email, have an email, you know, contact us, contact the Badat, it's under Badat Beit Yosef. So I contacted them and I sent them a message that I saw in Kud Kashrut, that the Kashrut was removed, what's going on. And they said there was basically, it was a procedural issue that he thought that if he has their good Hashgacha, he doesn't need the local Rabbanut, and therefore he didn't file for his Rabbanut, his local Rabbanut fee, and pay his local Rabbanut fee, so he could save himself the money. If I had a Hashgacha, who needs the local Rabbanut? And therefore he left the Tudah lapse, and therefore the Rabbanut, he was no longer listed in the Rabbanut record. So then they explained to him that he can't work that way, that you must have a local Rabbanut Tudah. So he was supposed to have gone ahead and corrected that and spoke to Rabbanut. I spoke with the owner and he said that he did, and the Tudah was supposed to be back this week. I didn't follow up, but this is an example of sometimes you have to be careful. But sometimes there are procedural issues as well, and this really was a situation where it wasn't a cautious issue, it really was a procedural issue. But in any case, the person has to be careful and to know if something happens to check into it, something funny happens. In Rehovot, there are a number of restaurants under Rav Rubin. Again, I don't have a full list. I just know there's one famous restaurant. There's a restaurant in Bordeaux on Ezra and something. I don't know exactly where it is. Ezra and Herzl?
Yes.
Pretty much Ezra and Herzl. That's the real restaurant, the Chalavi restaurant. But if you need to take someone out and it's happy with milchik, that's certainly acceptable. Now, I was also told, there's interesting, is that Yova Bajel from the Vatican, he came told me, there is a restaurant apparently in Rivadim, heading towards Masmiya, right? Which he says also under Hashgacha Mashgiach is also from Yad Binyamin.
It's a catering restaurant.
Right.
And Vassal Dayah has spoken several times and encouraged people to go there and eat there.
Okay. So they have it. Okay, so it's a catering, and they're open for lunch hours. They have about 2:30 unless they're closed. And they said that the Mashgiach here is on top of things, and the order Mahadrin meats of various kinds. He asked them which kind, and it seemed that it varies from week to week what the supply is. So if a person is particular about which Mahadrin he eats, then you would have to check what's being currently used. But the Rabbanut Mahadrin, there is this option of the Rabbanut of this in Rivadim, this catering which is also open in the afternoon. Apparently, also in Ulamei Hawaii, Yoav Bajel mentioned, there's also they have a business lunch in Ulamei Hawaii, which is also down Kiryat Malachi. Okay, you know, familiar with it is? No, I think it's supposed to look past Rami Levi. If you keep going, nobody here goes past Rami Levi, huh? Okay, but if you go a little bit past Rami Levi, it's supposed to be Ulamei Hawaii. It's a wedding place and stuff like that. Ulamei Hawaii. And they apparently still have business lunches there also. And that's also supposed to be Rabbanut Mahajan Kiryat Malachi, which is something else that was mentioned.
I tried
to contact the one who's in charge of Kashrut in Kiryat Malachi to maybe get a little bit of a tour with him. I was trying to get, I wasn't able to reach him the past few days, but I'm going to keep trying. I did finally make my debut, thanks to Yis Inker, I did finally make my debut to Rami Levi. He took me shopping with him last night and showed me around Rami Levi and Yesh, so at least I know what you're talking about now. Okay, I'd like to try going out to Mashgiach a little bit behind. I saw the front, the customer side of the store. I would try to go on the Mashgiach behind the counter. But what I did see, meanwhile, just apparently as far as fruits and vegetables, so the sign there says that the fruits and vegetables are under the Badat Beit Yosef, which is fine. And What else did I see? Of course, in all the, no matter where, in all fruits and vegetables, hashgacha, bear in mind that the hashgacha refers to chumas, sumaisis, and arla, bugs, no one takes responsibility for. Now, there's no one who gives the hashgacha on fruits and vegetables, unless it specifically says bugs, hey. But I'm saying, whenever you find that a store is on the hashgacha, that means that, as far as chumas, sumaisis, and arla, but you are responsible to follow whatever rules apply to checking for bugs. Whether if it's a regular grown something, or something, in which case you have to check very carefully. If it's something which is insect free, then it's to wash off. Yeah. Well, I think that if it's not, again, the Sfardim, as I mentioned, are more careful about, or the Sfardim tend to rely more on Rov, or Vajasev, you can follow the Rov. But if it says Makime Orla, I assume that means that they checked and I don't think that doesn't mean that they're relying on the Rov. Following Rav Yosef, if they see it's Naki Me'orla, then it should be free of Orla, and I think it should be reliable. Okay, there may be one or two issues, which I don't know. Let's say I mentioned certain things, let's say the papaya and the pasiflora, which Sfardim are more mekel on, that it could be that the Sfardim may give a hashgach on that. Ashkenazim on papaya and Orla are two fruits where Ashkenazim do are choshesh for Orla, consider them fruits, Sfardim consider them vegetables, but there's no Orla. But I'm not sure if that species would be good on papaya and pasiflora, because those are things probably don't consider fruits, as Ashkenazim tend to. Okay, I did see also notice that the chickens there, say the tenuva chickens, frozen chickens that they have, are under a Fanya Drori, that's the Sof HaGalil. Again, talking about the frozen chicken, the frozen have a row of just the standard frozen tenuva chickens. At least what I saw this week was Fun Joy, which is acceptable, as well as on the list you mentioned last week. What else was there? So we also, by the way, just also seen for that fresh chickens cost more than frozen chickens. That was, I guess that was for Shaf. Tip of the week. Okay, it seemed to me, check it out, but it seemed to me that no matter where you are, it seemed to me that the fresh chickens were more expensive than the frozen chickens. And I should also just mention that I also did notice that the prices, that if you compare to the prices that you have here in the makolot here, it is a little bit more. The regular was a couple of more shekel, the mahajan was maybe 4 or 5 shekel more a kilo. Again, it can add up, but if a person just needs one or two chickens, it doesn't, you know, to put it this way, to drive out to Rami Levi and the gas, certainly costs you more than what you're going to pay for the extra couple of shkalim over here. And it's also good to support your local store. And people wish to give them parnasa. I'm sure they can use the parnasa more than Rami Levi. So if you should have a situation where, you know, you can use one more chicken or something, don't hesitate to just go to the store over here. Looks, again, I'm not such a maven on prices, but it did seem like it's not going to be that difference, certainly if you're talking on a here and there basis. You're talking about a few extra shkolim. I can afford that to give the parnassus to the local person. In the Yesh, as well, it's interesting there, in the Yesh there were two dots on the fruits and vegetables, which is a little bit unusual, but Rav Afrati and also Badat Bells, Nachsik Yehadas. I did ask Schultz to check out why there are two. It's a little bit unusual. It could just be that he said that certain chains work under certain hashgachas. So it could be that this may have been a merge of a certain chain, or that the chain may, as a principle, go with this, and the local community may have wanted something additional. So I don't know exactly why, but there seem to be two dots up there. And there again, there were, as far as the chickens I saw there, they had a chicken they called Of Haaretz, okay, which is under Rabbi Mahadrin in Gush Etzion, and that also I spoke with Moshe Katz, Koshiot also okay is that, so that's fine. And then they have that, and then they have the flesh, which is also okay. Then they have again Reuben, and they have Vedat Beit Yosef. So in Yesh, okay, so you pretty much any of them are fine. Okay, yeah. All right. One other thing, which also when you're shopping, it's pointed out that you have to be careful, and this applies to no matter where you are, that a lot of brands carry two different runs, okay? Sometimes almost identical product, almost identical packaging. Someone sometimes with Mahajan, sometimes without Mahajan. For example, you show me a tomato paste. Okay, it was a tomato paste, which Yachin brand, which is tomato paste, almost next to each other. One was from the Hetzer Mechira, and one was not. One was Mahajan, not from Hetzer Mechira. So again, if you're master on that, you should have to check that you can't always say, well, you know, I know this brand is on it. Or for example, we saw as far as the deli, the pastrami and the turkey roll, etc. Say Tiras Tzvi in Rami Levi, the Tiras Tzvi was not Mahajan. We went to Yesh, they had Tiras Tzvi, which was Mahajan. Okay, or even with Rami Levi, there were certain packages, there were not that many, but there were some other packages that were. So you have to be careful. In fact, we saw in Yesh, we saw that they had two very, very similar with a slight change. And it was Tiv Hod Lavan and Tiv...
It was the Hod
Ov and Hod Ov. Hod Ov and Ov Tov, right? They were almost identical looking. One was sort of was designated for the Mahajan line, one was the Kashrut, that was on the deli. So again, so just the person has to be, as if you're shopping in a store, you have to always be aware that, you know, to check each product, because especially a kind of thing that's liable to have different, you know, especially on a deli or something like that, you can just check for each product. Don't assume that just because you're familiar with this brand that it always is going to be, because sometimes the very same brand or something very similar will be or will not be. And that's a tip in general. When shopping, you should be aware. Okay. What was interesting is that I didn't really see any Rav Mach put in either of the stores. Okay. I don't think
that. There's a big sign on Rav Mach put that there used to be.
Where? I didn't have a chance. Okay, fine. I didn't have a chance to look the. Okay, so I'm saying. Okay, fine. Yeah, that could be. I didn't read the two those behind the counters carefully. I was more looking. Okay. So that could be, because as I said, I was just more poking around. I didn't go really so much go behind the counters, and I was just more looking in the freezer. I was more looking in the freezer. So it could be that it could be if the table was taken away, that they just showed us the supply, then fine. Okay, again. Okay. One other thing, which is to mention again, I will get to this more in detail as far as say fish. Interestingly, fish. Fish. We think is the major issue by fish is to have fins and scales, and that's why it's pretty obvious which fish are kosher, which fish are not kosher. One of the issues which has come up recently is apparently there, and this is in all areas of halacha, there are issues of bugs and fish as well. Although the issue of bugs and fish is mostly either on the outer skin or in the head. The flesh of the fish is not a halachic issue. The issue is the fish that the external is what grows in the fish itself is halachic and not asur. The issues of things that externally came and got onto the fish. I mean, either they swallowed and it's in the stomach or on the skin. Okay, so it's usually either on the skin or in the head or in the stomach, and therefore a fish which you're not eating the head. And you scraping or you're taking off the skin and the stomach is usually scraped out. So then it's usually not a problem. It depends also if it's fresh fish. It comes up more with when it's grown in ponds. So the ocean fish is much less of a problem. The ponds are the problem because once you have a pond, a closed environment, and you start getting these parasites. Parasites start growing, they multiply very rapidly in the pond if the pond is not treated properly. Therefore, the one thing is about the hashgacha, is what do you need a hashgacha on fish for? That's one of the issues which the Hashgacha takes care of, to make sure that the pond is treated properly, that the parasites shouldn't grow rapidly. I happen to see in the Yesh, the fish was under the Hashgacha of Rav Rovach, which is a very, very one of the big people in terms of fish, parasites, one of his area of specialty, and that's certainly reliable. I didn't have a chance to check what they have in Rami Levi, but again, the major issue is in the stomach and the skin and the head.
So,
the inside almost is taken out. I mean, no.
Is it an issue for us, or it's not an issue if you get up from over the counter?
It should just make sure it's washed. It should be washed. Just make sure the inside is washed off.
Okay.
Okay. And the head.
Right.
Okay. And don't eat the skin.
Okay.
Okay, and again, it depends. Again, I'm not saying it can't be. It may be fine.
No,
I'm
no,
just
no.
saying is if you don't know anything about it, these are the areas where there are issues. We'll talk about when we get more in detail, but the issues are mostly the outer skin, the stomach, and the head. Those three places. Okay, so that's in terms of the lokriyas in general, and adkan for that first part topic. I'd like to begin moving towards the second topic, and that's mitzvot bars. Right, so when I get a list from there, hopefully next week I'll just fill in a few minutes at the beginning. But I'd like to move on now into mitzvot hatluyot baret. Okay, which is, thank God we're here in Eretz Yisrael, and it's a special opportunity to be able to have this fulfill the mitzvot hatluyot baret. The word itself, if you ask a kid, what does mitzvah hatluya baret mean? Okay, and most people will think, what's a mitzvah hatluya ba'aret, a mitzvah which is dependent on what? On Eretz Yisrael. That's what you typically would expect. A mitzvah hatluya ba'aret means a mitzvah which is dependent on Eretz Yisrael. Okay, take a look here in the first source, the Mishnah in Kiddushin. Okay, it says kol mitzvah shehi tluya. Kol mitzvah shehi tluya ba'aret, ena noheget ela ba'aret. What does that mean? Kol mitzvah shehi tluya ba'aret, any mitzvah is dependent on ba'aret, ena noheget ela ba'aret. Right, so kol mitzvah shehi tluya ba'aret, ena noheget ela ba'aret, anything which is dependent on Eretz Yisrael is only kept in Eretz Yisrael. That's what it's seen from the Rashi and Rashi learned. Tluya ba'aret means an agricultural mitzvah. Okay, kol mitzvah shehi tluya ba'aret, any mitzvah which is dependent on the ground, which is an agricultural mitzvah. Okay, ena noheget ela ba'aret. Agricultural mitzvahs are upheld in Eretz Yisrael. The she'ena tluya ba'aret, the mitzvahs that are not agricultural based, mitzvahs that are not root connected to the ground. Noheget bein ba'aret bein b'chutz la'aret chutz min ha'orla v'ha'kil'ayim. Orla and kilayim, even though they are agricultural mitzvahs, apply in chutz la'aretz as well. Rebelezer me'acha chadash also applies in chutz la'aretz. Okay, we'll get to these details a bit later on. But basically we have here three mitzvahs, agricultural mitzvahs, that apply in chutz la'aretz, orla, kilayim, and chadash, which seems to be machlokes. There's a mission orla, which is not on the source sheet, but the mission orla points out that all these are different levels. Orla is halacha Moshe Misinai in chutz la'aretz. Kilayim is midrabanan, and kaim is midrabanan. Chadash maybe midoraisa. According to Abalaz, if you hold chadash in the chutz la'aretz, it's midoraisa in the chutz la'aretz. Orla is halacha Moshe Misinai, and kilayim is midrabanan. What with the reason we don't find orla, we almost never find orla and kaim discussed in chutz la'aretz, even though orla does apply in chutz la'aretz, for one simple reason. In Eretz Yisrael, Orla is treated as any other suffek, whereas Chutz La'aretz, the halach Moshe Misinai was, only Vadai is Aser, but not any element of suffek. So therefore, in Chutz La'aretz, unless you happen to know you have a tree, that you know that this tree in your backyard is Orla, you never have to assume the possibility of Orla, there's only for Hashgacha, because only if you know that for sure it's Orla, you know, or you know that it's Kilayim, do you have to be choshish for it, but you don't have to be choshish at all for a suffix. That's why as a consumer, on the consumer end, we almost never hear about it in chutz la'aretz, even though technically it does apply. Chadash, as you know, is an issue as a machlokes, and that there is so we do find here about it in chutz la'aretz. But certainly all these mitzvahs apply in Eretz Yisrael. Now the major question which comes up, and that's the very, is what is the status bizman hazeh of all of these mitzvahs? Do these mitzvahs apply nowadays? Do these mitzvahs not apply nowadays? And on what level do they apply? And here there are two factors to consider. One is the issue of the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Does Eretz Yisrael have full Kedusha nowadays? And this is an issue of famous Rambam in Hilchos Beit HaBechira, in the Perek Vav, where he talks about the issues of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara talks about Kedusha Rishona and Kedusha Shania. Kedusha Rishona is when Yehoshua and Bnei Yisrael came and first entered Eretz Yisrael after coming out of Mitzrayim, they gave, they endowed the land with Kedusha. That's called Kedusha Rishona. When the Beit HaMikdash was built, the first Beit HaMikdash, and the Beit HaMikdash was also given Kedusha when it was built, and therefore you have Kedusha Rishona of the first Beit HaMikdash. When they went to Galus, perhaps that Kedusha was removed, and then Ezra came back, and Ezra re-endowed the land with Kedusha, and perhaps the Beit HaMikdash as well. And therefore the Gemara's whole discussion is either of these, or which one of these, which of these Kedusha are of permanent nature for all generations, and which ceased with the Golos. And the Rambam writes here in the Hilchas Beis HaBechira Perek Vav Halacha Tet Zayin, he makes a distinction between the Beit HaMikdash and the Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam writes that Kedushas Eretz Yisrael after the Golos, after the Am Yisrael went to Golos to the Babel, the Kedushas Eretz ceased, and Ezra had to renew it. However, that Kedusha continued eternally. That's what the Rambam writes towards the end. V'kevansha, towards the end of the second source, V'kevansha la Ezra v'kitsha, lo kitsha b'kibush el b'chazaka she'chazikuba. He explains what's the difference, how come after the first Golos, the Kedusha was removed, whereas after the second Golos, it wasn't removed? He explains that the first Kedusha came about through conquering. Am Yisrael conquered Eretz Yisrael, and therefore since they conquered it, it became theirs. But if the Kedusha is through conquering, so then if Bavel came along and Bavel conquered Eretz Yisrael, easy come, easy go. Capture come, capture go. And therefore the first Kedusha was removed when Am Yisrael were conquered and they lost their possession of the land, their conquest of the land was annulled, and therefore the Kedusha in that also was annulled. Whereas when Ezra came back, they didn't conquer the land, it was still under the Persian rule. They endowed the Kedusha to the land through settling in the land, through living in the land. That's what gave the Kedusha to Eretz Yisrael. And even after Am Yisrael in times of the Roman Empire were taken to Golos, the Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael never ceased. And therefore that Kedusha, since it wasn't through conquest, but rather it was through living in the land, through settling in the land, that remains eternally, and therefore that Kedusha of Kedushas Ezra continues nowadays. The Rambam has interesting shita that the Kedushas based HaMikdash, that Yishlomo's Kedusha is forever. The Rambam says, what's the difference? That's why there's a beautiful line here. Let's take a look here. It's a very beautiful language. That's in the second source. V'lamani ome b'mikdash v'yushalayim kedusha rishona kitcha l'atid lavo. How come I say that as far as the Beis HaMikdash, the first endowment of Kedusha remains eternal, and afterwards doesn't? V'kedusha shara et Yisrael inyan shvirtu masa v'chayotzebem lo kitcha l'atid lavo. And as far as the rest of Eretz Yisrael, therefore, it didn't, he says, the first Kedusha wasn't forever. Lefi, beautiful, beautiful words. Shekedushat HaMikdash V'Yushalayim Mipnei HaShchina Einah B'Tela. The Kedusha, we have to think again, the rule is, what is the reason, what's the source, what's the basis of the Kedusha? So the basis of the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash is the presence of the Shechina. And the presence of the Shekhinah, that's eternal. The presence of the Shekhinah, once the Kodesh Baruch Hu established Yerushalayim, established the Mokom HaMikdash as the Shekhinot to Yeshuva Tashama, as the place for which God decided to dwell His presence, that remains forever. And that even after the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, that doesn't mean that that's not the place of God's presence. V'arehu omer v'hashimoti et mikdashechem. I said, I will make your temples desolate. Even after being desolate, they're still called mikdash, they're still called temple. Because of the kibush, because of the conquest, that was annulled until Ezra came and resettled. So according to the Rambam, nowadays Eretz Yisrael has the potential, the kedusha ta'aret is full kedusha, even after Am Yisrael went again into Golos. The Kedusha throughout the last two millennia the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael was the same Kedusha that existed in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, in the times of the Second Temple. However, there is another issue, and that's an important issue that Rambam in the third source, where the Rambam writes, despite the fact that Eretz Yisrael has Kedusha, nonetheless, the Rambam writes that the mitzvah of Hatzuyos Baruch nowadays are primarily midrabanan. Says the Rambam in the third source, Hatruma bizman hazeh, vafilu bimakom shechziku olei Bavel. Even the area of the people of Bavel settled, and they endowed it with Kedusha, vafilu bimeezra. The Rambam writes, even during the time of the Second Temple itself, einam in hatara el midivrehem. The Rambam claims that Truma Samaisa, to respond to the requirement for Truma Samaisa, is Midrabanan, She'en Lecha Truma Shel Torah El Be'eretz Yisrael Bovad. There are two criteria. It has to be in Eretz Yisrael, U'bizman She'kol Yisrael Sham. For Truma Samaisa to be the required Midaraisa, you have to have all of Am Yisrael present. You have to have all the Shvatim, all the tribes, all the Jewish, or Jewish people there. She'amar Ki Tavo Biat Kulcha, Kishahayu B'Yushar Rishona, like when Ezra came, he had all of Am Yisrael, Ukomo, Shehein, Atidin, Lachzor, B'Yushar Shlishit. As we ultimately expect, right, when the third Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, then we'll have Mir Tashem, all of Am Yisrael here, and then once again the requirement for Shumas Amaisus will be Mida Oraisa. Right, so therefore, according to this Rambam, the requirement for Truma Samaisa Bizmanazeh is Mida Abanon, because we don't have even the land is Kadosh, but we are lacking the people, the presence of all of Am Yisrael here. We're looking forward for more people to come in Aliyah, looking forward for more people, and we're approaching almost the halfway point in terms of almost half the Jews already here. Mitzvah Shem, we're developing and building, but until the time that we have all of Am Yisrael here, Truma Samaisa is Da Abanon. Nonetheless, the poskim treat it very seriously. I mean, all their months have to be treated seriously, but as far as the Truma Samaisis, we don't find the poskim so much to us and therefore, kind of fake as we go to Kula, we do treat it very seriously, even though it's Drabbanan, because it's such a basic mitzvah, and the whole of Eretz Yisrael is dependent on this, and something which is very, very, which is a kind of mitzvah which encompasses all of life. Therefore, we find the poskim treat these mitzvahs very seriously. Okay, so this is a sort of introduction to Mitzvah Tzuyas Baretz, and basically we have here, tried to make a list in sort of the order of the Mitzvah Shem will be discussing it, what is the Mitzvah Tzuyas Baretz. We have, first and foremost, Truma Samaisos. What I'd like in Mitzvah Shem next week is to go through how to be Mafish Truma Samaisos, okay? For those who are not, some of you may already know how to do it, but in any case, we'll have to go over it step by step and try to get some forms and we'll fill in some other details about Truma Samaisa. So tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem, and next week, Mitzvah Hashem will be dedicated to Truma Samaisa, how does one be mafresh and how does one go about it on a very practical level. And so therefore, just what's involved in Truma Samaisa, you have here, there are five issues. In the source number four, we have the idea of Truma, where it says, Kol Chelev Yitzhar, Tirosh Vidagan. The Torah specifies three products where there is a responsibility of Truma. Yitar is, you know, Yitar is
oil.
Chochev Tirosh. Tirosh, that's easier. Tirosh is grapes. Is grapes wine. Vidagan is grain. According to many, many poskim, Truma Sumaisus Midaraisa is for these three species, for oil, for wine, and for grapes. Whereas other fruits and vegetables, again, according to most poskim, the Truma Samaisus for most other fruits other than oil, wine, and grapes is midrabanan. Again, we don't find poskim making that many distinctions. We don't say, well, this man is midrabanan and Truma, and it's only fruit, vegetables, therefore it's midrabanan. We continue to be very careful about these dinim, but the idea we find a mitzvah of Truma by these species, by these three kinds of food. And source number five, we talk about maser, given to the Levi, right? 10% of the produce is given to the Levi as their share. The Levim didn't get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. The Eretz was divided into the Shvatim, each Shevet got a share, and the Levim did not get a share in Eretz Yisrael, because they were expected to be supported by the rest of the people. Therefore, the 10% tax is supposed to be for the Levim, They're serving the people, they're serving the Beis HaMikdash, they're serving as the teachers to the people, and therefore the rest of Am Yisrael gave 10% to support the Levi who didn't get a share in Eretz Yisrael. In a certain sense, you think about it, it's really fair that everyone else got one piece of land was not given, everyone else got 10% more of land. Basically, the Kesevet Levi didn't get a share in the land, and therefore 10% goes to the Levi. In source number 6, you have the next step. After the Levi gets his Meister, he has to take 10% of his 10%, which comes at 1% of the original. That's called Ma'achumat Ma'aser, Ma'aser Min HaMa'aser. The Levi has to also give Chuma to the Kohen, just like the Yisrael has to give to the Kohen. From what the Levi gets, he also has to give to the Kohen 10% of his 10%, so 1% of the original. Then we find in source number 7, Ma'aser Sheni, Aser Taseh Kol Tfuat Zarecha, this is supposed to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash when the Beis HaMikdash was built and to be eaten in Yerushalayim. However, there's a possibility here if a person is too heavy to take, or nowadays where you won't be able to eat it there anyway because that's beaten B'tahara, there is a possibility of being Podeh the Ma'is HaSheni, and that is what we do nowadays. Mr. Hashem will discuss this next week as well. The Pidyon Ma'is HaSheni, we transfer the Kedusha from the fruit onto a coin, and that way we are called to the kedusha of the fruit. That's another step in the chumas in the chumas and maisos. And finally, in source number 8, we have another kind of maaser every three years on year 3 and year 6 of the shemitah cycle. Says b'miktei shalosh shanim tatziat kol masar tvoatcha b'shana shlishit v'nechta b'sharecha. This we call Meister Ani, and years 3 and 6, the second Meister is given and is not taken, it's meant to be taken to Yerushalayim or to be redeemed, but the second Meister is given to the poor people. This in Mitzvah Hashem will be next year, anyway, in the second year of the Shemitah cycle. Next year, the fruits and vegetables will have Chumas Meister Rishon and Meister Ani as opposed to Meister Sheni for next year's produce. Okay, again, we'll discuss all these in details when we get up. Okay, the other mitzvah we have is the mitzvah of challah. Okay, mitzvah of challah obviously is only for dough. Mitzvah of challah is meant for dough, and this is a mitzvah which is designated specifically, it's a special mitzvah for the, it's a mitzvah only on the women, because a man can also be mafresh, and a man who has a dough, a bakery, certainly is a chayav to be mafresh, but it's a mitzvah which certainly in the home setting is a special schus given for the women, to be able to do this mitzvah of being mafish challah. Okay, so we find these sartim, rafsim, and even zikra tanya, that shalosh mitzvot nashim, b'mem adlikin, we talk about the special care of the women for the mitzvah of challah. Right? Then we have the mitzvah of orla and kilayim. The first 3 years, the fruit cannot be eaten. Only the fourth year has to be redeemed. Orla, we'll see also, is asr not only to eat, but it's also asr bahana'a. Cannot be benefited from at all. It just has to go to waste. Now, it's also interesting, it's important to, I think, put in mind that, unfortunately, what happens sometimes, we tend to look at these on the isr, because on the pragmatic level, certainly in our context, the Easter aspect of all these mitzvahs sort of becomes a little more predominant. Let's say, for example, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, when you actually gave the Chuma to the Kohen, and you gave the Ma'aser to the Levi, and you gave the Ma'aser Ani to the poor people, as you could really feel and sense the elevating aspect of the mitzvah that you go, you mafish your Chuma, and you take it over to the Kohen, and you give it to him, you know, the Kohen who's serving the Beis HaMikdash, and you have this very elevating aspect, or you have the Levium. The Levium, everyone else is out on their farm, and the Levium are going around from city to city, or going up to the Beis HaMikdash, or teaching the people, and you come and you take your 10%, and you say, here, if you bring it to the Levi, to your local teacher, and you give it to him, that's right. Unfortunately, we are not able to really fulfill this completely, because the Chuma has to be in the Kedusha of the Tara, the Kohanim are all Tmeim nowadays, and therefore the Maisim were not able to eat the Chuma. So the Chuma has to be wrapped up and thrown in the garbage. So sort of a lot of the elevating aspect of the mitzvah, the Asei aspect, the giving aspect, we are no longer able to fulfill. And therefore, we sort of focus just on the fact that we have to take off the Trumas and Maaseh, sort of on the Isser, to make sure, because if you don't do it, then the food, it remains innocent. The food is not, you're not allowed to eat the fruit without being mafsek Trumas and Maaseh. And we're sort of missing and looking forward to the time that we'll be able to experience the positive side of the mitzvah as well. The same thing in terms of Orla, in a certain sense also, the idea of Orla is taken as a precursor to the fourth year. Often the first 3 years the fruit is minimal, it's not of great quality. The fourth year is typically when the fruit is begun to have a significant crop. And the idea is that the first 3 years don't do anything with, and the fourth year take that first significant crop, bring it up to Yerushalayim, and celebrate in Yerushalayim with this first day. You're finally having a chance to eat. Take your first experience of eating the fruit, eating the crop in Yerushalayim. Once again, we are not able to do this nowadays because it has to again be eaten b'kedusha, has to be eaten b'tara, which we're not able to do, and therefore again we just are putting it on a coin, so we sort of don't have the experience again of actually eating va'achalta lefnei Hashem Elokecha, the elevation of that mitzvah we are lacking. But nonetheless, we have to be careful to technically go ahead and be mafresh the ma'aseh sheni, and then be poda it on a coin with whatever elements and orla as well. Therefore, we cannot, even though we're not really going to get to this v'achalta lefnei Hashem Elokecha the fourth year, nonetheless, the issur for the first 3 years remain intact. We have the kilayim. Kilayim has two aspects of kilayim. This is a little bit less on the consumer end, but those have gardens. There's kilei zraim. If you have a fancy vegetable patches, our neighbors Tananias have, but they have about 10 kinds of vegetables in the garden, so you have to leave a certain separation between each vegetable patch. And what's also significant, it's most significant, so there are not that many people who have grapevines, but those who do have grapevines also kill a hakerem. Those who have grapevines in their yard, or certainly if they have a number of grapevines, they also cannot have vegetables growing in between. That's kilei hakerem. You cannot have vegetables growing in between your grapevines. So if you have grapes, then you have to be extra careful not to have the vegetables in the vicinity of the grapes. Okay, chadash is a mitzvah, which is again, is a mitzvah which in the times of the Beit Hamikdash had a very elevating quality to it. The grain grows in the winter. And then Pesach time is when the harvest begins, and the first harvest, the first crop is supposed to be brought in the Beit HaMikdash, in the Omer, and the Shtei HaLechem, and only after the Omer is brought, then you can go ahead and eat the new grain that grew. Nowadays, again, we don't have the Beit HaMikdash, but nonetheless, if there is any crops, any grain which grew, you're not allowed to eat it until after the first day of Pesach, till Chol Moed Pesach. In Israel, it doesn't come up that much because we don't the grains that are grown here during the summer. The grains only are grown here during the winter, so therefore it doesn't come up so much anyway. But it becomes mostly an issue for import stuff because in America, as you all know, they have summer crops and they grow oats and wheat during the summer, the winter crop and the summer crop. And the summer crop, if Chadash applies in Chutz La'aretz, would apply to the summer crops, until after Pesach. Okay, so therefore this issue, ironically, the issue of Chadash is more of an issue in Chutz La'aretz than here, or for imported stuff, than for Israeli crops, because they really don't have, in practice, you don't really have Chadash here, growing here in Israel. Okay, and finally, Shviyas about Shemitah, of course, is one of the highlights of the Mitzvah of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, which we're able to feel a little bit, I think we are able to feel a little bit more. Not only the Isser aspect of what not to do, but also what yes to do, the sense of the Kedusha Shviyas, and we were able to experience 2 years ago. Nowadays, we don't have that. Now I'm saying nowadays, two years into Shemitah, there isn't that much left other than wine. We have some wine now, which is Kedusha Shviyas, and we have also some cans and jars of fruits and vegetables that may have been Kedusha Shviyas. Alright, so these are the mitzvahs of Tluyas Baretz, and Mitzvah Hashem will be going through the current weeks through the halachas of each and every one of them. As I said, next week we will, Mitzvah Hashem, go through the Lemaisa, how to, on Hafrashas Trumos Lemaisas. Okay.